From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2008 when a man named Nathan Mansky saw a photograph of Harvey Milk. You might know that Milk was one of the first openly gay elected officials in this country, and his story has been told in many places. But this photograph was, to Nathan, something different. It showed Milk riding on the hood of a car and holding a sign that read, "I'm from Woodmere, New York." The picture was taken during the 1978 San Francisco Gay Pride March, and in Nathan's eyes, it was a symbol for just how far people had come to express their pride, to celebrate who they are. Nathan thought, "Harvey's from Woodmere, New York. I'm from Driftwood, Texas." And just like that, a new project was born. I'm From Driftwood is an online collection of stories, an honest and often gripping portrait of what it's like to be LGBTQ in the world today. I'm From Driftwood has stories that come from just about everywhere. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. I'm from Israel. I'm a lesbian who came out to my grandma because of Hurricane Sandy. More than 1,000 stories since that project began. Now, contrast that project with what we're seeing in North Carolina and Mississippi. In North Carolina, the governor recently signed a new law that prohibits transgender people from entering public bathrooms that conform to their gender identity. The law also prohibits local governments from passing their own anti-discrimination laws regarding the LGBTQ community. This week, Nathan Mansky is in Rochester. He's involved in several events, including one on Tuesday night at the Gay Alliance's new Resource Center. But first, he is my guest for the Hour on Connections. Flew in this morning, and it's great to see you in studio, Nathan. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also here is Scott Fearing, Executive Director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, and they're hosting the event tomorrow night. Nice to see you as well, sir.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And there's, you know, never anything going on with Scott, as we said, we've talked on this program many times about the ongoing work when it comes to equality. And I think, Scott, that what we're seeing in North Carolina, Mississippi is a reminder of why you have been constantly warning people not to be complacent. Yes?
Absolutely. It's one of the things, excuse me, that I remind my community members often. The work is not done. The work continues. What has changed in some ways is that the work, again, my apologies, the work is becoming much more local, which is where the work of the Gay Alliance really is. You know, we're in people's neighborhoods, in their schools, in their workplaces, right here. In Rochester and working closer to home. So some of the national, some of the statewide stuff we think of as being complete, but we also have to remain vigilant as we're doing this work locally to watch out what's going on in the bigger picture.
We have a lot to talk about this hour from a lot of different angles on this. I mean, I think I'm from Driftwood. Nathan will be able to give us a sense for some of the stories that have come into that project. And you can check it out right now if you're listening maybe at work or online. I'mfromdriftwood.com is the website. And, you know, so you will see, you know, we could talk about North Carolina or Mississippi. We could talk about American law. We could talk about New York law. Nathan has seen stories from around the world, and there are some very harrowing stories there. But let's listen to what Governor Pat McCrory from North Carolina recently said on Fox News defending signing that bill into law. And you're going to hear this interaction with Governor McCrory and one of the Fox and Friends morning anchors there about why they wanted to pass this law in North Carolina.
We firmly believe that if you're a man and you have the anatomy of a man, you shouldn't use the women's restroom, shower, or locker room facility. It's basic common sense. It's an etiquette of privacy that we've had for decades. And it's amazing that the national politically correct police have descended upon my state and unfairly smeared my state. While Syracuse University is going to be playing in a Final Four against the Carolina Tar Heels in Houston, Texas, a city which rejected the exact same ordinance by 61% of the vote just 5 months ago by the people of Houston. And there are no protests or boycotts of Houston, Texas during the Final Four basketball tournament, nor there should there be. So none of these corporations criticizing North Carolina, they're all going to be advertising during the NCAA championship. And there's a lot of corporate and political and media elite hypocrisy about this.
So Governor, you're saying that essentially the sex you're born with, let's go with that picture on the men's and women's bathroom. If it's a little dress and you're a woman, you go in that one back and forth.
Okay. So there's the conversation with Governor McCrory on Fox and Friends. And let me ask both of our guests for their general reaction when the governor says this is a common sense law, this is privacy. I guess I'll start with you, Scott. Common sense law. It's about privacy. And he says political correctness has run amok, that's even controversial. Go ahead.
Boy, where to even start with all of that and still have time left in the hour. So, yes, it's about privacy. And unless you're going to have somebody at the door looking under people's undergarments to see what genitalia they have, let's stay the heck out of this. I mean, this is about providing people with a safe place to go to the bathroom, which is something necessary for humans. This gender assigned at birth, or as they say, which little box was checked, is so much more complicated than that. And again, that's an entire hour-long workshop. But what we need to understand is that if that person, if I'm a transgender person and I'm showing up to use the restroom and I'm presenting as male, if it would be unsafe and unwise for me to go into the women's room or vice versa. So it is the gender that people identify with, that they're presenting as, that they're comfortable with, should be the restroom that they go into. I mean, the studies are clear. I mean, it's very easy to get people really sort of worked up about this idea of a man putting on a dress, going in a women's room and molesting small children. That isn't there's no record of that ever happening. And so we need to be logical and sensible about how we're approaching this. This is really a matter of personal privacy, people being able to relieve themselves in a room and in a space that they're comfortable with.
This is the razor blade in the candy bar of boogeyman stories. I have not been able to find a single case, and I've looked, I have not been able to find a single case of someone who is transgender or someone claiming to be transgender to use a bathroom to spy on people or to sexually assault children. I have not found one. I'm just trying to look at evidence. I haven't seen one case.
I've not seen a case either, and I've done a fair amount of research. Again, I've got background in human sexuality. I've called and talked to lots of different professionals who work in that area. And first off, they say, you know, somebody who is out to molest or to be a peaker or whatever kind of language you want to use, is not going to feel comfortable trying to put on women's attire in order to go into that room to commit their crime. The reality is there have been three Republican political leaders who have been arrested for bathroom molestation and sexual behaviors, and yet we have no records of a transgender person ever doing it. So, you know, it gets very, very complicated as we begin to look at these things.
I think there's only one solution for that, and have a Republican-only bathroom.
I think that's a great idea.
Nathan, is there a bigger slur against the transgender community that their identity is based around predatory behavior?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the transgender community is so much lesser known, even within the broader LGBT community. I know, you know, because of I'm from Driftwood, I have, you know, a lot of Facebook friends who I've never met. People just add me, but some of them think that the transgender community should not be part of the LGBT community. So, you know, all of a sudden you have these issues of all these bathroom bills that are now coming up because it has never been an issue, and now it's just fear-based. And it's like people are, you know, well, because of Laverne Cox and all these people who are the transgender community is becoming more well-known, and now people are using that as a wedge to scare people. And, you know, and what did this bill do? What's different today than it was before this bill passed? I mean, who's only harm to people. No one is being helped from this.
And we need to remember this isn't a new boogeyman. You know, for decades, we've heard that gay men were much more likely and would be molesting children. So, you know, that whole idea of vulnerable youth, you know, people at risk because of, you know, the predatory nature of folks from the LGBTQ community, this is not a new boogeyman being created right now. They've just twisted it into a new use. Again, as the trans community becomes more visible, more involved politically and out there saying, yes, we're part of this. So, you know, for 20 years almost, I've been doing education work on LGBT issues. I remember back in the late 80s and into the early 90s talking with corporate leaders about bathrooms within their workplaces for transgender individuals. And, you know, that long ago has basically been settled, and most places have worked their way through that. Interesting that the sound clip there, Governor McCrory brought up the college basketball. The NCAA has some of the absolute best advice and documents on their website when it comes to transgender college athletes. When to deal with issues of locker rooms, when do you go from playing on the women's team to the man's team or vice versa if you're transgender and transitioning. So the campuses have done a very good job at dealing with these issues. And again, I think this is just creating a boogeyman. And one of the reasons that I'm excited about the work that Nathan does is that what we know is that real stories, real people's lives, real conversation can help make change happen.
I see the phone ringing. And listeners, if you want to join the conversation about this or any of the issues we're going to discuss this hour, you can do that. It's toll free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'll tell you about the event coming up tomorrow night with Nathan Mansky with the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley at their new resource center. And if you want to check out some of the stories that we're going to be talking about, I'm from Driftwood.com. I'll start with Don Anise Rochester, who's been waiting to join the conversation. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. I'd like to quote a police officer in Richland County, South Carolina. He's quoted in this morning's New York Times, who when told state lawmakers last week that the law would be unenforceable because his officers could not be in the business of inspecting people's genitals. In the 41 years I have been in law enforcement in South Carolina, I have never heard of a transgender person attacking or otherwise bothering someone in a restroom, Sheriff Lott wrote in a letter to the subcommittee studying the state's bathroom bill. Quote, this is a non-issue. But it is an issue because Governor McCrory is a rabble-rouser. He's pandering to extreme elements in his state, much the same way that George Wallace did when he stood in front of the schoolhouse doors in the early 1960s. He was pandering to the most extreme elements in his state. This is ridiculous. Pat McCrory is up for re-election this year. That is why this bill went through in a special session of only less than 24 hours. He is up for re-election. His opponent is the state attorney general, who said he will not defend this law in court. Also, the people of North Carolina and people around the nation are fighting this law. Every day, people in Raleigh, North Carolina, the capital, demonstrate in front of both the governor's office and the state legislature. The people are fighting back. Organizations are withdrawing their job offers in North Carolina. Entertainers are refusing to perform there, and so on. People are fighting back, and Pat McCrory is just a rabble-rouser seeking to spread bigotry and hate in order for him to get reelected. That's all I want to say.
That's all, Don. Well, thanks very much for the phone call. And you know, I do think Don's making a point that has been expressed by a number of people who've already written into the program today. I'm going to read one of them. This is an email from a listener named Dan, who says, Evan, this morning, Democracy Now! Interviewed Reverend Dr. William Barber, a reverend in North Carolina and president of that state's NAACP. In that interview, Dr. Barber states, and I think it's worth quoting at length, quote, let me be clear, this is not a bathroom bill, this is a hate bill, where the transgender community is being used the same way that Jesse Helms used gay people and race in 1984 when he was 40 points down in the polls, end quote. Dr. Barber suggested Governor Pat McCrory is in a similar situation, being largely unpopular and needing to improve that. And he goes on to make an enormously important point. Again, this is Dan's email. He says, quote, inside that bill in Section 2, it denies a municipality or a city the ability to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, to paid sick leave, to paid vacation. In the third section, the bill disallows citizens of North Carolina from filing employment discrimination cases in state court. This is why he calls HB2 anti-family, anti-worker, and a trick bill that uses transgender people in the same way black people or Latino people have been used in the past. They're being scapegoated in order to pass all of these anti-labor parts of the bill. So Dan writes that that's being undercovered, that there are a lot of politics in play here. And I guess, Scott Fearing, if you look at the November election, this is Governor McCrory's re-election year. He is running against the state attorney general. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it starts to look like a referendum on this bill, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. And, you know, this is where, you know, as they say, all politics become personal. And he's pandering to the extremist, you know, side of the citizens of North Carolina, and not all of them are going to be supportive of this. But there certainly are enough that he's looking at increasing the number of votes he gets.
Yeah, he could win. I mean, Nathan, if he wins, what does it say to you as someone who has been collecting stories from the LGBT community around the world? To see him win in November, what would that be? What message would that be to you?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think about a lot is what if he saw some of the stories that I have from transgender people on I'm From Driftwood? And unfortunately, I don't think it would have changed anything. In terms of politics, I don't think that he knew what he's doing. Like the caller said, like the email you just read, it's 100% a political move. He probably didn't know anything about transgender people beforehand. He didn't do any research before he supported this bill. I don't think that anything could have been done to stop this. And I think what the good thing is all the backlash that's happening. I think a few days ago, I wish I had it in front of me, but he actually made an executive order for LGBT protections in the state to kind of like walk it back a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
My
understanding is what he walked back was allowing for lawsuits. That was originally that kind of language was going to stay in there. He does say he's going to protect the rest of the law and that he's not going to back down from that. But here's the business impact that Nathan's talking about. Here's just a list that I've collected through the New York Times, and probably not a full list, but this is for North Carolina and Mississippi, which has passed a recent law kind of coupled with that, the North Carolina law, similar law in that businesses in Mississippi are going to be protected if they want to not serve gay people based on religious belief. And according to the New York Times, here's the business impact so far, a sampling. Ringo Starr, former Beatles drummer, announced he was canceling a June show in Cary, North Carolina, saying, quote, "I'm sorry to disappoint my fans in North Carolina, but we need to take a stand against this hatred." Sharon Stone canceled plans to film a movie in Mississippi about cyberbullying. Deutsche Bank announced it would freeze a plan to create 250 jobs at its technology development center in Cary, North Carolina, in response to that state law. The 37th annual Mississippi picnic held in Central Park in New York City was canceled as a result of the law. Canadian singer Bryan Adams canceled a concert scheduled for April 14th in Biloxi, Mississippi, as a result of their new law. PayPal said it was canceling plans to open a global operations center in Charlotte that would have employed 400 people. More than 80 chief executives of corporations and technological giants, including Facebook, Apple, and Google, signed a letter to Governor McCrory of North Carolina urging that the entire law be repealed. Bank of America has its headquarters in Charlotte. It was a signatory of that letter. And the letter reads, quote, "We are disappointed in your decision to sign this discriminatory legislation into law. The business community, by and large, has consistently communicated to lawmakers at every level that such laws are bad for our employees and bad for business." And finally, Braeburn Pharmaceuticals said it was, quote, "extremely disappointed and was reconsidering plans to expand a plant in North Carolina that would bring an investment of nearly $20 million and 52 new jobs." So, Scott, what's the message there? I mean, that's not one. Say, that's not just Bruce Springsteen canceling a show. I don't even think we got Bruce on the list there.
No, you didn't.
Yeah,
no.
That's right.
There's a number of them, United Airlines, Williams-Sonoma, some others that
the NBA, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, saying they are thinking about canceling the All-Star Game in Charlotte next year. Yeah.
So one of the things Governor McCrory said in response to somebody asking him about this list was, to him, it was proof that the corporate boardroom is completely out of touch with Main Street America. And apparently McCrory is in touch with Main Street America, and this legislation is, which I would argue is not the case. But the reality is human rights, equal opportunities, full inclusion is indeed an issue that businesses have to pay attention to. And they have learned that if they want to be successful, if they want to grow, if they want to become bigger and better, they need to be inclusive in their work. And they understand why there is a business case for becoming inclusive on LGBT issues. And, you know, the governor, unfortunately, is what I oftentimes will categorize as maliciously transphobic or maliciously homophobic. It's like purposeful. It's like almost like a game for him. You know, in order to get these votes, I'm going to say these things. And my guess is in his heart, he's probably truly not an evil person who would want to hurt anybody. But he just does not understand how this is playing out and really does hurt real live lives. And again, that's one of the power of hearing those stories from Nathan's website, is to hear what real live people can experience.
And let me just follow up on one of Governor McCrory's points that we haven't made, and I'll ask both of our guests what they think. In that same interview on Fox, he went on to say, look, you've got the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, eliminating non-essential travel to North Carolina. And yet Governor Cuomo is encouraging travel to Cuba, which has a terrible record with transgender people. True, right? I mean, is that a fair point?
I think it's a fair point. I know that the question also has come up about somehow related to China, and I forget the exact connection there. I think those are worth looking at, but we're talking about a fellow state. We're talking about, you know, part of the American democratic process and our federal tax systems and federal dollars. So I think we have an obligation to look more closely at our fellow states than we may another country.
Nathan, you agree?
Yeah, I just love that he compared his own state to Cuba.
Well put.
Let me grab Dan in Brighton next up. Go ahead, Dan.
Under this new law, what's to stop people from saying, my religion forbids me to serve to black people or Asian people or Catholic people or Jewish people? That's one question. And two, although I'm delighted by the response of corporate America, where are they 60 years ago when we were trying to integrate lunch counters? Thank you.
Dan, thanks for the phone call. In regards to, he's referring to the Mississippi law, which protects businesses that want to not serve people from the LGBTQ community based on religious reasons. And he's saying, okay, the slippery slope there. There's probably some logic in that concern, isn't there, Nathan?
Yeah, I also think that the second thing that he commented, I think this is the lesson that we're seeing, the result of the lesson that was learned from businesses not standing up for what's right, and they're doing it now. It's a way of making up for it in a way. But I'm sorry, what was your question about that?
Well, I mean, I think his concern about that slippery slope, that I'm a business and based on my religious conviction, I don't want to serve gay people. I also don't want to serve black people. I don't want to serve, you know, whatever it is. His concern is if you allow it, that carve out for LGBTQ, you know, get ready to eventually see that expanded. Legitimate concern?
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, there are many religions in the world, and many religions follow many different beliefs. And who's to say that you can't, you know, not serve someone for being, you know, whoever or whatever they are. Yeah, of course it's a legitimate concern.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
One of the things I like to stress is religious freedom in America is the freedom to have or not have religious values and or a religious community that you're part of. So for instance, and I think I've used this analogy on the show before, on my block, I may have people who are Catholic and who are Lutheran and, you know, Lutheran Wisconsin Synod and other synods, and people who are Buddhist and people who are animist and all different religions. And all of that is great and fine in the way it should be. What is wrong is for any one household to demand or expect legislation to take their idea of what is sinful and put it onto every other household on that block. That's what religious freedom is all about, is you get to have that belief. Now, when it comes to providing public services, you're adding a whole nother layer onto that. If I own a business and my goal is to serve the public, I may not be able to use my personal religious freedom to say, I'm sorry, I don't like you because of your religion, your skin color, your sexual orientation, your gender identity, whatever it may be. So I'm not at freedom to use my religion in my business to chase people away.
Well, let's do this. Let's get a short break, and we're going to come back, and let's hear more of Nathan Mansky's story. I'm From Driftwood is the project. It's imfromdriftwood.com, and we're going to learn how it started and what it has already accomplished in bringing stories from around the world to that site. And we're going to talk about what he is in Rochester for. Tomorrow night, there's an event. And so when we come back after this very short break, that's part of the conversation. By the way, let me just mention as well, if you want to call the program about that or anything else that we've been discussing, North Carolina law, Mississippi law, the phones are open, 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 if you want to call the program. Coming up in our second hour, do you know who Frederick Law Olmsted was? Well, he is the father of American landscape architecture, designed Central Park, among many others. Buffalo hired him, and he created a park system there that many feel is unrivaled. So, next hour, a look at Olmsted, his legacy, and how Rochester can benefit going forward.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Heart Hearing Centers, providing hearing care for adults and children since 1977. Audiology services include hearing and tinnitus evaluations, rehabilitation, and devices to accommodate lifestyle needs. Details at harthearing.com. And the Doyle Automotive Group, serving the Rochester region for more than 70 years. Doyle Subaru offers symmetrical all-wheel drive vehicles for all-weather driving, including the 2016 Subaru Legacy, on Ridge Road in Webster and online at doylesubaru.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and my guests for the hour are Scott Fearing, Executive Director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, and Nathan Mansky, the Founder and Executive Director of I'm From Driftwood. And Scott was just mentioning a quote that you wanted to mention before we move on here. What was the quote you wanted to mention?
It's the Chamber of Commerce out of Charlotte, North Carolina, who said it was that the HB2, the bill in North Carolina, was the stupidest thing they've ever read. So the business community is absolutely speaking with a unified voice.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Nathan's story and the creation of I'm From Driftwood. And I gave you a little bit of the backstory here, but I want you to take me back, if you could, Nathan, to seeing that photo of Harvey Milk and kind of set that up for me. What happened and how did that affect you?
Sure. I saw the film and the next the film Milk. And the next morning I was waking up to go to work. I used to work in advertising, and I just kept thinking about that photograph, that image of Harvey Milk holding that sign in the San Francisco Pride March. And it just kind of like hit me.
By the way, if you missed it earlier, the sign said what? Harvey Milk sitting on the hood of a car, and the sign said?
The sign read, I'm from Woodmere, New York. And, you know, some New Yorkers know where that is, but generally it's kind of this obscure town that most people don't
know. Which is part of the point.
Exactly. And you know, it just made me think that this is Harvey Milk, one of the most most well-known LGBT activists in the world at that time. But he's not from San Francisco, which is like this big gay mecca. He's from this tiny town on Long Island. And that hit me because I was thinking about this in New York City, where I live now in Brooklyn. But I'm not from there. I'm from Driftwood, Texas. And, you know, for me growing up, it was about isolation and feeling like the only gay kid in Texas. You know, so I felt that message of you're not alone, no matter where you are, what you're going through, and of course, getting that message through storytelling. It all just hit me that one morning. And an interesting part of the story is I was concerned that I wouldn't be able to focus on this because of work. I was a copywriter in advertising, and, you know, my hours were always unpredictable and always busy. But the very next day, I went into my job and I was laid off. So I suddenly, you know, Wednesday I saw Milk, Thursday I thought of the idea, and Friday I was laid off. So, you know, before we went live, you were asking me, like, how long did it take between thinking of the idea and launching it? And it was only 3 months, and that's because I had a lot of time on my hands. But yeah, so that's, you know, that was the inspiration and how it kind of came to be.
And since that time, since launching in 2009, you have had how many stories shared at I'm From Driftwood?
Over 1,000. We do written stories and video stories, and now we publish a new video story every single Wednesday morning. So, it's become like a regular schedule, and, you know, we're always filming more. And that's actually why I'm in town right now. We're going to be filming some stories from Finger Lakes Community College, and then some stories here at the center on Wednesday. So
you've got some work to do for the site. There's an event tomorrow night. What's the event tomorrow night, Scott Fearing?
So tomorrow evening, Nathan will be joining us at the LGBTQ Resource Center at 100 College Avenue. And we'll spend 2 hours basically talking about the project and showing clips from the project and giving people information and talking about the power of storytelling. It's something that's near and dear to our hearts at the Alliance, in that we have for 40 years had a speakers bureau through the Gay Alliance, and sending individuals out to tell their own coming out stories in different places. And I can tell you again, in my years of doing this work, that's the best way to make social change happen, is to engage on a level that touches both the heart and the mind, and being able to engage people in a conversation about what they can't argue with, which is your reality, your stories. You know, yes, you know, my parents said this or that, or I lost this or that job. That's not a fact that people can argue with. It is a fact of my life.
Well, yeah. We're going to be talking to Nathan about some of the, well, I mean, they're all powerful. I mean, every person's story is their own story, right? Yep. So they're all powerful. But let me grab a phone call before we go too much farther. Bob in East Bloomfield's been waiting. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, I have a couple of observations and comments to make. First of all, the Republicans make a whole lot of laws for problems that don't exist, you know, starting with the voter ID. You know, the other month I was down in Allegheny County visiting a restaurant that's only open 2 months out of the year. And I went to the bathroom, they had three, men's, women's, and family. You know, all we need is a family room where you go in there and lock the door and the problem is solved. But on another token, I think we should reward people when they do things that are right and proper, like the governor of Georgia that didn't sign that bill, and just save the state from going back to the days of Lester Maddox with his axe handle standing in front of his restaurant to keep black folks like myself out of there, you know. And I'm not going to worry about Mississippi too much because they've got a governor there about to impeach anyhow because he's taking taking around with some woman, you know. They're not all that self-righteous, you know. Oh, he's a good religious man, but, you know, things happen. So
I think you're thinking of Alabama, actually, aren't you, Bob?
Those are the only comments I want to make.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bob, thanks for the phone. I appreciate it. I think he's thinking of Alabama,
yeah.
Though. Occasionally it is hard to figure out, keep track of all the governor scandals. I think he's actually thinking the governor of Alabama. But Bob, I appreciate the phone call. And I just want to ask our guest real briefly. I think he had a very well-intended comment about family bathrooms.
Yes.
But I also think it's understandable if the reaction from the transgender community is, well, you don't need a family bathroom. You know, you just need men's and women's bathrooms, right?
Yep. And what we're finding more and more of is just restrooms that aren't gendered. So you have got three individual bathrooms. You can walk into any one, and they're just, you know, to use my country background and our outhouses, it's a single holer. And you don't have to worry about things. So that's what we're seeing more and more of is non-gendered rooms.
And you've seen, and I'm from Driftwood, stories from gay and lesbian people, from transgender people from around the world. I'm curious, Nathan, when you really kind of got this thing going, sometimes things take a little while to get some traction. What was the process like before people sort of knew you existed?
Oh, scary. It was very scary because I, you know, had no job and I was focusing just completely on this. And I was emailing all my friends, having them submit written stories. And I launched the website we just had our 7-year anniversary in late March, and launched it with 9 stories and just started emailing like all day long. I would just email LGBT blogs and ask them to post about it. And they did. And then the stories just started pouring in. And, you know, my biggest concern at the beginning was I didn't want people to think that it was a coming out story site. So the stories cover every aspect of LGBT life. So there's love stories, there's, you know, relationship stories, there's, you know, really, you know, because we're so much more than just that one story. But people got it. And, you know, we started doing video stories, I think only a month after we launched. And those became the most liked, you know, people like seeing who the storyteller is, you know, this on YouTube, it's more shareable. And since then we've done, you know, the goal now is to share stories in as many ways as possible. So we've done live storytelling events. We've self-published a book. We've done a theater workshop. And we want to do in 2010 that we talked about earlier, we did a 50-state story tour. So we traveled to all 50 states and collected stories from towns and cities all across the country. And we want to do like regional story tours. So especially now I'm like, you know, chomping at the bit to go to the South. I'm like, let's get some stories from, you know, from North Carolina and Mississippi. And, you know, and we already have stories from there. I mean, we have a story from a trans woman who at a very young age, she, you know, identified as a woman, but her biological gender was male. And she didn't feel comfortable at all going to the boys' restroom. And she also looked feminine, so people thought that she was a girl. And it was just confusing. She wouldn't want to take her shirt off and, like, you know, mm-hmm. shirts for skins. And so it's, you know, those issues have existed forever. And, you know, of course, the dream would be that, you know, people like Governor McCrory would watch these stories and be like, oh, these are actually people who have been going through these, you know, issues and struggles for a long time. Maybe I shouldn't sign this bill.
Well, and you say that's the dream, and I know, you know, you have a, I don't think cynical is the right word. I think you're trying to keep a realistic view about Governor McCrory and his take on this. You don't think that there would be a lot of impact on someone like him. But I'm curious to know if you've heard from anybody, you know, because naturally the LGBTQ community is going to gravitate to this site. But the idea is, and you say it right on the site, you want straight people to hear the stories, to become allies. And have you had some experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely. A high school classmate of mine, I went to my 10-year reunion, and I had just launched the site then, and I gave him my card. And, you know, this is rural Texas. So, and he emailed me later, like a week later, saying, you know, this is really impressive what you're doing. You and I, like, won't agree on a lot of specific issues. This was, he was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still in place. And, you know, he thought that gays shouldn't be able to serve. But we had this very, you know, cordial and friendly conversation back and forth. But he did say that these stories are what's going to create change. And, you know, if these stories don't change the governor's mind, it's going to change his constituents' minds. And, you know, that's why a cultural shift is so important, getting these stories out there. And if I can talk like a little bit as a geek a little bit, sharing stories increases empathy. And there's a scientific reason behind that, because if you share a story, it activates, it's called mirror neurons in the listener's mind. So you actually experience what the same thing that, you know, so if I tell a story to Scott, Scott is experiencing that on a microscopic level, what I experienced. So that's what empathy is. So, you know, and he can't help it. Sorry. but that's what, you know, that's what changes people's minds, yeah. Literally changing their minds, because it's activating these neurons and, increases empathy. So that's what's, you know, is going to change the cultural, needle.
Yeah. I mean, that's, first of all, that's interesting hearing that to begin with. And then just as creatures, we love stories. We love to listen to stories, I think. So again, listeners, it's imfromdriftwood.com if you want to check it out. It's really easy to sort and kind of check out the various stories. It's very, very well organized. And we're talking to the founder and the executive director, the man behind it, Nathan Mansky, who is in Rochester this week filming some stories for I'm From Driftwood and going to be here at an event tomorrow night. What time is the event, by the way, at the Resource Center tomorrow?
6 p.m.
You looked at him like you don't know. You're the guy who planned. You run the resource.
Six to eight p.m.
Okay, you said confidently.
Yes,
six
absolutely.
To 8 p.m. Open to the public.
Open to the public.
Okay, cost to go?
Nope.
Free tomorrow.
Come on
night.
In and participate in the discussion.
And Nathan will talk about that impact of storytelling on people. You know, you started to tell a little bit of your own story of growing up in Texas. I'm from Driftwood means Driftwood is where most of us don't know where Driftwood is. Where is that?
The closest city is Austin. So it's about, you know, 40 minutes southwest of Austin.
That's a pretty cool city to be close to.
It is a very cool city to be close to. Yeah. And, you know, but it's a long 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I grew up on 40 acres of land. You know, it was, I had three brothers and, you know, cows and horses and chickens. Like
you're like
full,
a Texas stereotype.
But no accent.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, not until a couple drinks and then it starts slipping out.
Now, okay, so in your own story, you said you felt like the only gay kid in Texas. And, you know, so can we talk a little bit about your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, people think that I, for fair enough reasons, that I started the website because I had a really difficult childhood. But I didn't. My family is amazing. Never any issues with me being gay. I was never bullied. You know, I wasn't out in high school, so that, you know, that might have helped. But really, it was just growing up on that land, and I had no exposure whatsoever to different cultures and communities. And well, I did. I mean, it was. You know, but it wasn't gay culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're a teenager, I didn't have a car until, you know, later. And, you know, I'm not going to drive to Austin to hang out at a gay bar where I just had no exposure to the queer culture. And this was, you know, I think Ellen had just come out. Like, it was just a really different time. And, you know, so for me, I had a really great childhood and growing up. But again, it was just the isolation that I felt.
But you said you weren't out in high school.
Right.
But you knew you were gay.
I did is, you know, most people, I mean, I knew I was gay since the second grade when a new boy showed up at school. And I was like, I want to sit next to him. I don't know what that means, but I, you know, I like Cody. Yep.
But could you have come out in high school, do you think? I mean, you, of course you could, anybody can, but could you, and would it have been just a smooth sort of an upbringing for you?
I honestly think that I could have done it. I mean, now, you know, Facebook has changed everything. I'm friends with so many people from high school, yeah, and they, yeah, I think I definitely could have. I think some people would have, I think they would have respected it. You know, being in a tiny town and doing something as difficult as that, I think that would have, you know, kind of overpowered any other issues that, that would have come with it. It's like, wow, like this kid in rural Texas just came out as gay. That's impressive. So, and I think that, you know, I went from kindergarten to my senior year, so everyone knew each other. There was, you know, some general bullying, but, you know, like everyone kind of got along and everyone knew me and I had my own close little circle of friends. So I think that I could have. And of course, I look back now and I'm like, man, I should have, like, because I know that all my classmates would have been okay with it. But that's now, you know.
Sure. So, and yeah, and so that sense of isolation, feeling like the only gay kid in Texas, was not because you felt like you couldn't come out or people weren't supportive. It was just rural, a big, you know, 40 acres to begin with. And dating's got to be really hard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how had you even, that's probably, you know, why I imagine a lot of gay kids in rural areas probably moved to more metropolitan areas, because you probably would like to date at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, in high school, I had a girlfriend, so that took care of that. But then, you know, once I went to UT in Austin, and that's when I really came out and started dating and, you know, had boyfriends. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was, yeah, I, you know, and now I live in New York City where there's, you know, tons of gay people. But, you know, I don't think my dating life has improved that much in New York. So, you know, who knows? I don't know.
Well, I can just throw in that we still hear from a lot of kids in sort of the rural areas around here. You know, we hear very similar tales that still exist. Now, the big difference, of course, is, you know, you talk about Ellen coming out as sort of part of your process. There's so much more visibility, and the internet and phones and all that kind of stuff have increased visibility, but it hasn't necessarily made it easier to come out. I spoke to actually a teacher today from Mount Morris, New York, who called me this morning about starting a GSA down there. And, you know, she actually was doing it because she has a kid in her school who has two moms. And one of the kids asked for a way to connect with other kids who would be welcoming and be okay with somebody having two moms. So there's still a sense of isolation. It's very different from what Nathan experienced, very different from what I had experienced, you know, 20 years prior to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think of the contrast of what Nathan is describing in rural areas versus, you know, my young son's class. There's 15 kids in class, and two of the kids have two moms, and it's just not a big, I mean, it's nothing, right? It's
right.
Just, it's nothing. But, you know, so maybe that's a little less common in rural areas. And so in 2010, when you did the 50-state tour, do you find yourself, I don't know if gravitating is the right word, or really empathetic to gay kids in rural areas who, you know, you're looking at them going, you know, I was in your shoes?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, a funny thing happened. I would do story sharing events, much like what we're doing tomorrow, from 6 to 8.
And, you
know, I would always ask the people who were in attendance, what is it like growing up queer here, wherever it was? Mm-hmm. And consistently, the people in the small towns, their hands would shoot up and they would say, just because we're in a small town doesn't mean that we're bigoted and that we're idiots and that we're, you know, that it's terrible here. Like we have a really tight community. I'm out in my town of 400 people and no one cares. People support me. And the same or opposite, depending on how you look at it, was true in big cities. So we were in Los Angeles. They have an amazing LGBT center there. And I was giving a story sharing event and I asked and I almost didn't ask because we're in West Hollywood with this amazing LGBT center. And I was like, well, what's it like to grow up LGBT here? And they, I mean, there was clapping after they said this. They were, they said, just because we're in West Hollywood doesn't mean it's easy. And they don't grow up in Los Angeles. They grew up in their homes and their parents aren't okay with it and their neighbors aren't okay with it. And just because it's Los Angeles proper, doesn't mean it's easy. So really both ends of the spectrum, they were challenging that, stereotype and preconceived notion of, you know, it's terrible to grow up in a rural area and it's great to grow up in a big city.
What a powerful story that is. Yeah. So can you share just a few of the stories that stand out among the thousand that have come into from Driftwood?
Yeah, one, we had an event in New York last week, and I shared this one, so it's fresh on my mind. Her story was she came out to her mom, and decades ago, and her mom was not cool with it at all, like locked herself in the room, like wouldn't eat, like was just not okay
her
with
mother
it.
Wouldn't
her
eat?
Her mom, yeah, was wow. just like devastated by it. Mm-hmm. Over time, she started coming around. She started, asking questions and making references to news and, and kind of as a way to let her know that she's kind of okay with it or getting there. And then, years later, she was pregnant with her partner, female partner, and the mom wanted to go to the hospital room when she was giving birth. And, the storyteller was like, nope, definitely not. Like, mom is not going to be in the room when I'm like giving birth. And her partner was like convinced her. She was like, this is really important to her. It means so much to her. Let her do it. And she did. And, her partner, it was a difficult birth. It was birth.
Some are more difficult than others. I can attest. Yeah.
And they had this really magical and special moment. And it was kind of this like culmination of their whole entire journey. And they have a photo of the grandma holding the grandson. And unfortunately, 6 weeks later, she was killed in 9/11. And she worked in the World Trade Center.
Oh my!
And so her story is this entire journey of how her mom's really it was her mom's story and how she came around. And
her mother was killed in 9/11.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The grandmother.
Yeah.
Oh
yep.
my God.
And but so she really is just looking back on the whole story and it's like, thank God we had that day, and we got the photo and we had that experience. Like, imagine if that happened and she didn't let her mom be there. And so it was just and from locking herself in the room from, because her daughter's a lesbian, all the way to watching her give birth, in a lesbian relationship in the hospital. It was just a beautiful story that with a tragic ending, but, thank God she had that experience.
That kind of story makes me wonder, when is it going to be where, and not to condemn the mom who locked herself in a room, but when is that story going to be such an outlier as to be, you never see that anymore? But we're not quite there. And that's why when Nathan said, not all of the stories, in fact, he didn't want it to be just coming out stories, but sometimes it's not just the coming out story. How did you feel? It's the impact and then seeing the change.
Yeah, we actually had a story that I always remember because she says she never came out. She affirmed her sexuality. So she told her mom, she was like, oh yeah, I met this girl at school today. And she's like, oh, like, okay. And they just had a conversation about it, but it was never, I'm a lesbian. It was, I met somebody at school. Her name is Lauren. And we went on a date. I really like her. And it was just, so it was more affirming her sexuality, letting someone else know, but it's not, it was different than coming out.
Yeah, really remarkable stuff. I want to mention real briefly here that the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley and their resource center, they've been partnering with Bob Peace, who is local, right, Scott Farron? You want to tell me about what he's doing?
Sure. Bob approached me about 4 or 5 months ago, and he was interested in gathering some video stories of local individuals that could potentially be used for classroom use or other educational purposes. And his project is called Our Gay Lives Project, and the website is oglproject.org.com. And he's partnering with us to do some filming in the Resource Center, very similar sort of work to what Nathan is doing. But again, local stories, hopefully to have a local impact.
Okay, and it's online at
oglproject.com.
oglproject.org is what I see.
Okay, .org. Sorry, thank you.
Well, that's
you.
What you sent me, and that's
yes,
what I would use. So
yes.
OGLproject.org. Can't trust Scott for anything.
But boy, I'm really hitting very low today.
These kind of stories really are so moving, and just seeing just a few comments from listeners. Chris, by the way, says on Twitter, Chris says, Driftwood, Texas is beautiful and has amazing barbecue. Yeah?
Yes. The barbecue restaurant there is called the Salt Lick.
He just wrote it, Salt Lick Barbecue on Twitter. That's
yeah,
the handle.
I have 3 older brothers, and the 4 of us all worked through high school and college. And, yeah. So there's nothing else out there. So it's, the place to work if you live out there.
just a couple other comments here. Christine writes, thank you for this, trying not to cry listening to these beautiful stories. And Tom writes to us and says, one of the main principles advocated by the Republican Party is to get government out of the way and allow decisions to be made at the most local level. How do Republicans reconcile state preemption with this principle? Tom is referring to the North Carolina law that essentially superseded Charlotte's effort to have an anti-discrimination law aimed at protecting LGBTQ citizens. And that's one of the common complaints I'm hearing, is that this is not government getting out of the way. This is government getting right in the business.
Yep.
So, Tom, I think that's a common concern. And as you've heard throughout this hour, voters there will have a lot to say in November, and it will be interesting to see. But no matter who wins that election or no matter what happens with that law, Scott Fearing, some final thoughts from you going forward. I mean, just another reminder that work continues, right?
Exactly. And there is a need for the Gay Alliance and the work that we are doing through the Resource Center, the work is not done. There's a lot yet to do.
How many of your straight friends said after the Supreme Court decision, like, well, you don't even need a job anymore?
Not only the straight friends. I hear it from the LGBTQ community, too, who are like, oh, well, you're fundraising anymore. I'm like, well, no, we still have bills to pay. We still have a need to exist. There are still people looking for services.
Well, and part of what they do is bring in speakers and hold these community presentations tomorrow night, 6 to 8 at the Resource Center, which is where, Scott?
100 College Avenue.
100 College Avenue. So it's still relatively new. I mean, it's still new.
It's 4 months.
Okay, yeah, that's new.
That is new.
6 to 8, and it's free.
Yes.
And you can meet Nathan Mansky, and he's going to tell you more of these stories about the power of storytelling. I'm from Driftwood.com. Nathan, congratulations on the success there, and thanks for sharing your story and the stories you've collected from around the world.
Thanks for having me.
All right, short break and much more Connections next.